Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikulskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is Andrew Gross. He is a novelist. He is out with his brand new novel. It's a thriller called The Fifth Column. The book is available now wherever your fine books are sold. It's set in the early 1940s in New York City. It involves World War II. It involves the Nazi infestation in America. And it's just a fantastic thriller. Andrew, I don't want to give anything away on this. I usually try to summarize these, but I don't want to spoil anything. Can you give me just the little 2-cent version of it?
Yeah. I admittedly, it's hard when you're talking thrillers to talk too much about a story. All you can really do is talk about the setup. But The Fifth Column, as you say, takes place in New York City in the months before Pearl Harbor. For 2 years in Europe, there's been a war raging. But here, the country is cleaved down the middle between interventionists who want to come to the defense of Britain and isolationists like the America's First Party, who argue that it's Europe's war and to stay out. But these fears of German spy rings embedded into everyday life then were rampant. So here's Charlie Mossman, a husband and a father who's lost his job as a professor. He's lost his marriage, and he's lost his freedom, all due to alcohol. He spent a couple of years in jail for something. But in trying to reconnect with his 6-year-old daughter, who now she and his mother live in the German-speaking neighborhood of Yorkville in New York, Charlie begins to suspect that the kindly Swiss couple down the hall from them, who have taken a liking to his daughter, are not at all who they say they are, but Nazi spies. And ultimately, as America enters the war, the threat of these two, of this couple, grows quite lethal. So it's kind of a quintessential Hitchcockian situation. Charlie is the only one who can see these clues. No one else can, and no one else believes him.
I thought about the Hitchcock connection. Were you a Hitchcock fan, and was that on your mind as you wrote?
What I love are the setups of Hitchcock. So, you know, what I like about this one is we have the ultimate unreliable witness, discredited witness, who is the only person, who can see what's really going on. And of course, everything in his recent life says, why should I believe you? And, you know, the threat starts out, of course, where, you know, his initial instinct is, I just want to regain credibility with my family. It then moves into, my God, if these are spies, and as he sort of gets further along in it, this could be a threat to the United States. And then ultimately, once America goes to war, the threat becomes even more personal because it does involve his daughter as kind of an unwitting victim in the whole
And I always think of people like Charlie Mossman, and if you were to take them out and put them into today's society, the things he was saying, observing, it'd get him put in a psychiatric institution in 2019, right?
Well, maybe today it wouldn't be a psychiatric institution. It might be the tombs in Lower Manhattan. It might be a jail. So in today's world, perhaps. But, yeah, there actually is a lot of currency to today, to the political climate today, because, you know, this was a time that was cleaved right down the middle between the ice. You know, Europe was at war. America sat on the sidelines for 2 years. And during that time, the isolationists tried to convince everyone to stay out of the war, and Charles Lindbergh was their leader. And the interventionists behind Roosevelt wanted to get in the war and come to the aid of Britain. So it was an extremely divisive time, not unlike maybe the time that we're living in now. As a matter of fact, one of the books I read about those times was called Those Angry Days. So there are a lot of similarities to now.
I know you do a ton of research for these books, and you've set books in World War II era before, but just as far as getting the idea of the culture of New York City at the time, do you listen to music? Do you watch movies from the era? What do you do to put yourself in that mindset back then?
Of course, in a period piece like this, it's important to get the details and nuances correct. So this is, as you say, the third book I've written in this era, so I do know the times by now. But basically, you know, you do everything from reading novels that are set in that period to seeing film, and even today online, photographs of that period help out as well. Because ultimately, you know, I don't want to lay it on too thickly, because at the heart of these things, I do write thrillers, but I want people to feel that they are transported to those times. And I think over the last three books I've done that have all kind of been set in that era, I've learned how to do that. The AP came out with a review yesterday. I guess their headline was that The Fifth Column is a stellar novel, so I love it. But one of the things they talked about that I love, too, was that all the characters in this book seem so real. It's as if I knew them personally. So I take a lot of pride in when people feel that way.
I'm chatting with Andrew Gross about his brand new novel, The Fifth Column. It's a thriller, available now wherever fine books are sold. Andrew, you spent some of your education time in Iowa City, right?
I did go to the University of Iowa. I was in business for much of my life, and when I made a transition, I didn't want to drag my family through something promiscuous, I guess. So I wanted to get a good feel for whether I had the goods to measure up, you know, from a writing point of view. So I spent one summer at the Iowa Writers Conference, not so much sort of to learn how to write, but more so to audit and to gauge myself. I kind of said that if I couldn't sort of rise to the top of a class with 12 people in it, how was I going to ever expect to make a career out of this? So, you know, it was actually a very fun period. I like the town, and certainly the program is as good as there is in America.
Well, and that's a program that they have a summer writing program now where people from the general walks of life can go and hear all these authors speak. And it just seems like that's such a great way just to take all of that in, and you're completely submerged in it for a summer in what would probably be the academic writing capital of the country.
Yeah, no question about it. I guess like any change of life, I mean, I was running sports apparel companies in the first part of my career. And, you know, like I said, you have a dream, but there's a million people that have a dream to write a novel. Certainly I had one on my bucket list. This is my 19th, including six with James Patterson. So I sort of have been doing this longer than I think I've been doing anything else in my life. You know, there's a lot of access now, and the writers program in Iowa was one of the first things you could do that gave people access to writers. Before, you'd sort of have to write the publisher and hope you ever got a reply. Today, there are various ways, including Facebook and Twitter, et cetera, that you can directly engage people. So I look at that time as very productive.
What's that like for you as somebody who was in business for that long, running sports apparel, to make that transition? I mean, just the risk that you take has got to be something that you just have a lot of faith in yourself, right?
Yeah, I think some of it is you're not really aware of the risk while you're doing it. And there was a lot of luck in terms of my own career. Like I said, I've now done 19 books, and a bunch of them have been New York Times bestsellers. But the truth is, I don't know what I'd be doing in life were it not that a novel that I wrote and spent 3 years on, that eventually was unpublished, somehow landed in the lap of James Patterson. This is almost 20 years ago, before he was James Patterson today. He read it and called me up out of the blue and said, you know, I read your book, which surprised me in itself, because I thought my book was in every garbage can on Madison Avenue at that point. And you got the goods. And he said, let's meet. We met in a diner in White Plains outside of New York, and he proposed an idea that he had for a second crime series. And not having any clearer path in life at that point, I said, I'm in. So every success story has some fortuitous turns of events.
When you write with somebody like James Patterson, how often are you together, or is it a matter of exchanging manuscripts and giving each other notes?
We were together very little, to be honest with you. And in his case, it's probably not a one-minute story, but he would give me outlines of his ideas for, you know, for a storyline. There were a lot of holes in the outline, so I don't want to say it was all totally fleshed out. By no means. And part of my job was to do that. And then I think at this point it's fairly clear that the people whose names are below him might be doing a lot of the writing work, the initial writing work. And one thing I'll say about Jim is that he always had last draft on these books. And whether I haven't worked with him in 15 years now, but whether he was working with me or various other people now, they all kind of read like Patterson novels. So he knows how to take everybody's style as best they try to emulate Patterson and turn it into his own. So I always liken it to when you walk into a polo store, they all look like an identical reflection of the brand. And that's kind of, whether you like them or don't like them, that's kind of what a Patterson novel reads like as well.
All right. This new book is The Fifth Column by Andrew Gross. It's a thriller novel based in World War II times in New York City, available wherever books are sold. Andrew, fantastic book. Thanks for joining us to talk about it.
You bet. Thank you for having me.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakulskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.